probably died confused, never had a chance to use a spell. I looked up at the gatekeeper. It wasn't some big, arcane, mysterious reason. It was because everyone was human. In my experience, he said, that is more than mystery enough. I was gathering up my things to leave and go back home when Ebenezer appeared in the doorway. Hawes, he said calmly, figured I'd walk you home. Appreciate it, sir, I told him. I had already sent Mouse home with Molly, and it was always a good idea to avoid walking the ways alone. We started walking through the tunnels. I was heartily sick of them. I'm not claustrophobic or anything, but I think you need some kind of groundhog gene to enjoy living at White Council HQ. We hadn't gone far when I realized that Ebenezer was taking a roundabout route to the way, through tunnels that were largely unused and unlit. He conjured a dim red light to his staff, just enough to let us see our way, and in the color least likely to be noticed. Well, he said, we filled the 48th seat on the senior council today. Klaus the Toymaker? I asked. Ebenezer shook his head slowly. Klaus didn't say it, but I suspect the Merlin asked him to decline. Grigori Christos got the seat. I frowned. The seats on the senior council were awarded gerocratically. Whoever had the most years of service in the council was offered the position of leadership, though there was nothing that required a wizard to accept a seat when it was available. Who the hell is that? He's not up at the top of the seniority list. My mentor grimaced. Aye, a Greek. And an unpleasant bastard. He's lived all through Southern Asia over the past couple of centuries. Distinguished himself in the battle with that Rakshasa Raj the council took on recently. I remember when it happened, I said. I heard it was pretty crazy. Ebenezer grunted. He was Lafortier's protege. I took that in, processing the logic. I thought that block had been appeased. When someone wants power, you can't buy him off, Ebenezer said. He'll take what you offer and keep on coming. And Christos as much as told the Merlin that he and his allies would secede from the council if he didn't get the seat. Jesus, I said quietly. He nodded. Might as well give the Red Court the keys to all our gates and let them kill us in our sleep. Fewer bystanders would get hurt. So the Merlin made a deal, I said. Didn't have a lot of choice. Christos's people gained a lot of support after they lost so many at the trial. He'd have taken a third of the council with him. Screw the selection process, huh? Ebenezer grimaced. It's never been codified by anything but tradition. Oh, the Merlin made a show of adhering to it, but I guarantee you it was arranged behind the scenes, Hoss. He shook his head. The senior council has issued official positions on Lafortier's assassination. Let me guess, I said. Lone gunman. He frowned at that for a moment and then nodded. Oh, Kennedy. Yes. It was an act of individuals motivated by profit. There is no evidence to suggest the presence of an organized conspiracy. There is no Black Council. I stared blankly at Ebenezer. That's stupid. Damn right, he said. But they had a majority. The Merlin, Christos, Mai, Martha Liberty, and the Gatekeeper. I shook my head. What the hell does he think he's accomplishing? Ebenezer shrugged. He's never been easy to read, and I've known him since I was 16 years old. Two or three explanations come to mind. Like, maybe he's Black Council? Ebenezer walked for several steps in silence, then he said, Aye. Or maybe Peabody got to him harder than we all think, I said. Improbable, Ebenezer said. The drugs he slipped the senior council let him nudge them, us. But we're all too crusty to bend more than that. What then? Well, Hoss, he said. Maybe Langtree's word about the consequences of officially acknowledging the Black Council. I felt a little chill glide over the nape of my neck. He's worried that if enough people knew that the Black Council was real, they wouldn't line up to fight them. They'd join. Everyone loves a winner, Ebenezer said. And we haven't been looking too good lately. People are afraid. Christos is building his influence on it. I stopped in my tracks and all but threw up on the cold stone floor. Ebenezer stopped, putting his hand on my arm, and frowned in concern. What is it, boy? Sir, I said, hearing my voice shake. When Peabody came to the island...
Yes?
He wasn't alone. Someone else came with him. Someone we never saw. We said nothing for a long minute.
That's only one explanation, Hoss, Ebenezer said. It's not even a calculated estimate. It's a flat-out guess.
There was no conviction in his voice, though. Ebenezer felt the same thing I did. A hard gut feeling that left me certain, not pretty sure, but certain, that I was right. Besides, we were talking in whispers, in an out-of-the-way corridor of our own damn stronghold. If that didn't tell you something was seriously wrong with the White Council, I don't know what would.
They're inside, I whispered.
My mentor faced me gravely.
That's why they whacked Lafortier,
to get their own man into position. I leaned against the wall and shook my head.
They won.
They won the round, he said. Fight isn't over.
It is for Morgan, I said.
But not for you, he said with harsh intensity. Morgan thought that saving your life was worth losing his own.
Ebenezer took a deep breath. Then he said, very quietly,
Hoss, it ain't over. Some of us are going to do something about it.
I looked at him sharply.
Do something?
It's just a few for now. Some wizards, some key allies, people we know we can trust. I'm the only one who knows everyone involved. We've got to take this fight to the enemy, learn more about them, determine their goals, shut them down.
Fight fire with fire, huh?
Ebenezer smiled wryly.
In denying the existence of one conspiracy, Langtree has necessitated another.
And got himself a twofer with a side order of irony, I said. If the Black Council finds out about us, they're going to jump for joy. They'll expose us, call us the Black Council, and go on their merry way.
Us, already, is it?
His eyes gleamed as he nodded.
And given what we'll be doing, if the White Council finds out, they're going to call it sedition. They'll execute us.
See what I mean? Just like Disneyland. I thought about it for a minute. You know that in every objective sense, we're making a Black Council of our own.
Aye.
So where does that leave us?
With pure hearts and good intentions, he answered. Our strength shall be the strength of 10.
I snorted loudly.
Ebenezer smiled wearily. Well, Hoss, we're not going to have much choice other than to be walking down some mighty dark alleys and doing it in mighty questionable company. Maybe we should think of ourselves as a gray council.
Gray council, I said. We started walking again, and after a few minutes I asked him, the world's gotten darker and nastier, even in just the past few years. Do you think what we do will make a difference?
I think the same thing you do, Ebenezer said. That the only alternative is to stand around and watch everything go to hell.
His voice hardened.
We're not going to do that.
Damn right we're not, I said. We walked the rest of the way to Chicago together. Murphy drove me down to get my car out of impound, and I caught her up on most of what had happened on the way.
You're holding out on me, she said when I finished.
Some, I said. Sort of necessary. She glanced at me as she drove and said,
Okay.
I lifted my eyebrows.
It is?
You're beginning to deal with some scary people, Harry, she said quietly. And people are trusting you with secrets. I get that.
Thanks, Murph.
She shook her head.
I don't know, Harry. It means I'm trusting you to come to me when you've got something that intersects with my responsibilities.
I'm a cop.
If you screw me on something I should know, she shrugged.
I don't know if we could ever patch something like that up.
I hear you, I said. She shook her head. I never really cared for Morgan, but I wish it hadn't ended that way for him.
I thought about that for a minute and then said, I don't know. He went out making a difference. He took out the traitor who had gotten hundreds of wizards killed. He kept them from getting away with God only knows what secrets.
I shrugged. A lot of wardens have gone down lately. As exits go, Morgan's was a good one.
I smiled.
Besides, if he'd been around any longer, he might have had to apologize to me. That would have been a horrible way to go.
He had courage, Murphy admitted. And he had your back.
Yeah, I said.
Did you go to his funeral?
No one did, I said. Officially, he was corpus non grata, but we had a kind of a wake later, unofficially. Told stories about him and came to the conclusion that he really was a paranoid, intolerant, grade-A asshole. Murphy smiled. I've known guys like that. They can still be part of the family. You can still miss them when they're gone. I swallowed.
Yeah.
Tell me you aren't blaming yourself.
No, I said honestly. I just wish something I'd done had made more of a difference.
You survived, she said. Under the circumstances, I think you did all right.
Maybe, I said quietly.
I went through that phone you sent me.
She meant Madeline's phone, the one Binder had given me.
What did you find? I asked.
The phone numbers to a lot of missing persons, she said. Where's the owner?
With them. She pressed her lips together.
There were a lot of calls to a number I traced back to Algeria, and another in Egypt. A couple of restaurants, apparently.
She took an index card out of her pocket and passed it to me. It had the names and addresses of two businesses on it.
What are they? She asked.
No clue, I said. Maybe Madeline's contacts in the Black Council. Maybe nothing.
Important?
No clue. I guess we'll file this under wait and see.
I hate that file, she said. How's Thomas?
I shrugged and looked down at my hands. No clue. My apartment was a wreck. I mean, it's never really a surgical theater, except for right after Morgan had shown up, I guess. But several days of frantic comings and goings, various injuries, and serving as Morgan's sickbed had left some stains not even my fairy housekeepers could erase. The mattress wasn't salvageable, much less the bedding, or the rug we transported his unconscious body on. It was all soaked in blood and sweat, and the various housekeeping fairies apparently didn't do dry cleaning. They'd taken care of the usual stuff, but there was considerable work still to be done, and moving mattresses is never joyful, much less when you've been thoroughly banged up by a supernatural heavyweight and then stabbed, just for fun, on top of it. I set about restoring order, though, and I was hauling the mattress out to tie onto my car so that I could take it to the dump when Lucio arrived. She was dressed in gray slacks and a white shirt, and carried a black nylon sports equipment bag, which would hold, I knew, the rather short staff she favored, and her warden's blade, among other things. The clothes were new. I realized belatedly that they'd been the sort that she'd favored when I first met her, wearing another body.
Hey, I panted. Give me a second.
I'll give you a hand, she replied. She helped me maneuver the mattress onto the top of the Blue Beetle, and then we tied it off with some clothesline. She checked the knots, making sure everything was just so, and then leaned on the car, studying my face. I looked back at her.
Rashid said he talked to you, she said.
I nodded. Didn't want to push.
I appreciate that.
Quite a bit, actually. She looked off to one side. Mouse, now that the work was done, came out of a shamelessly lazy doze he'd been holding in the doorway, and trotted over to Lucio. He sat down and offered her his paw. She smiled quietly and took it. Then she ruffled the fur behind his ears with her fingers, the way she knew he liked, and stood up.
I wanted to be sure you were recovering.
That's very responsible of you, I said. She winced.
Oh, damn it to hell, Dresden, she shook her head. I spent almost 200 years not getting close to anyone. For damn good reasons. As can be evidenced by what happened here.
Can it?
She shook her head. I was distracted by you. By us, I suppose. Maybe if I hadn't been, I'd have seen something. Noticed something. I don't know. I kind of thought that you were distracted by the mind mage who had you twisted in knots.
She grimaced.
They're separate things. And I know that, but at the same time I don't know that. And here I'm talking like some flustered teenager.
She put her hands on her hips, her mouth set in annoyance.
I'm not good at this. Help.
Well, I said, I take it that you came here to let me know that you weren't going to keep pursuing whatever it is we had.
It's not because of you, she said.
I know, I said. Never was it? She exhaled through her nose, a slow sigh. Her eyes lingered on me.
I've always liked you, Dresden. For a long time I thought you were dangerous. Then I saw you in action against the heirs of Kemmler, and I respected you.
She smiled slightly.
You're funny. I like that.
But, I asked.
But someone pushed me toward you, she said, and that pisses me off. And
she started weeping, though her posture and her voice didn't waver.
And I thought that maybe I had broken through some kind of scar, or old wound, or something. That I had grown closer to you, and maybe would keep growing closer to you. And it made me feel,
she shook her head as her voice finally broke,
young. It made everything feel new.
I walked around the car to stand in front of her. I reached a hand toward her shoulder, but she raised hers in a gesture of denial.
But it was a lie. I'm not young, Harry. I'm not new. I've seen and done things that you can't understand. That I pray to God you'll never need to understand.
She took a deep breath.
This is ridiculous. I should be better at handling this.
What's wrong? I asked quietly. I mean, other than the obvious.
I got to have sex again, she snarled, and I liked it. I really liked it. I had forgotten exactly how mind-numbingly incredible sex is, and right now I'm having trouble forming complete sentences because I want to rip your shirt off and bite your shoulder while you're still sweating while you...
She broke off abruptly, her cheeks turning bright red.
You're not even 40.
I leaned against the car, looking at her, and started laughing quietly. She shook her head, scowling ferociously at me, her dark eyes bright.
How am I supposed to give you orders now, she asked, when you and I have done all the things we've done?
Well, what if I promise not to put the pictures on the internet? She blinked at me.
Pictures? You are joking, Dresden, aren't you?
I nodded.
Because I had quite enough of that during my first young adulthood, she said. Italy may not have had an internet back then, but you'd be shocked how quickly pictures can circulate, even when they're painted on canvas.
Anna, I said quietly. She bit her lip and looked at me. I reached out and took her hands. I squeezed them. Then I lifted them to my lips and kissed them each once, gently. Whatever the reason, I'm happy to remember the time we had. She blinked her eyes several times, looking up at me. I get it, I said. Things have changed, and maybe that time is over. But you'll be okay, and I'll be okay. You don't have to feel guilty about that.
She lifted my hands to her lips and kissed them, once each, just as I had. A tear fell on my knuckle. I'm sorry, she said.
It'll be okay, I said. It's okay. She nodded and looked up at me. I could see the calm, collected strength of the captain of the wardens, ready to assume its guiding role. I could see the uncertainty of Anastasia, who hadn't been close to anyone in a long time. And maybe I could see something lonely and sad that was part of who she had been when she was a young woman, well over a century before I was born.
Goodbye, Harry, she whispered.
Goodbye, Anna, I said. She squeezed my hands and turned to walk away. She stopped after half a dozen paces and looked back.
Dresden? I looked at her. Rashid doesn't talk much about the night Morgan died. I barely remember anything myself after Peabody said what he said.
I knew what she was after. He wasn't alone, I said. I was with him. And he knew that he'd found the traitor. He was content. Something tight in her shoulders eased.
Thank you, she said.
Sure. Then she turned and strode purposefully away. I looked at the blood-stained mattress on the Blue Beetle and sighed. I didn't feel like driving it anywhere. It was early. I could wait a few hours. I turned to Mouse and said,
Come on, boy. I need a beer. We descended out of the summer heat into the relative cool of my basement apartment. Maybe I needed two. It took Justine more than 2 weeks to get me that meeting with Thomas. When she called, she was speaking in her official secretary tone again. She stipulated a public meeting place where both of us would have the protection of the need to maintain a low profile. It was a precaution that the White Court had required of me, given how tense things had been between the Council and the White Court's leadership of late. I met Thomas on a Saturday afternoon outside the Great Cat House at the Lincoln Park Zoo. As I came up, I spotted a pair of Lara's security guys trying to blend in. Thomas was leaning on the rail that looked into this big pit where they keep a couple of tigers. He was wearing tight blue jeans and a big loose white shirt. Every woman there and a large chunk of the guys were looking at him with various degrees of lust, longing, interest, and seething hatred. I walked up and leaned on the rail beside him. "Hey," I said.
"Hey."
We stood there watching the tigers for a few minutes.
"You asked for the meeting," he said. "What do you want?"
I arched an eyebrow.
"Thomas, I want to see you. Talk to you. Be sure you're okay. You're my brother, man."
He didn't react to my words. Not at all. I studied his profile for a few moments, and I said, "What's wrong?" He moved one shoulder in a careless gesture.
"Nothing is wrong, per se, unless it was me."
"You were wrong?"
"I was an idiot to try to live the way I've been living," he said. I looked at him sharply.
"What?" He rolled a hand in a lazy gesture. "The boutique. The constant nibbling, never sating myself. The..." He shrugged.
"All of it."
I stared hard at him. Then I asked very quietly, "What did the Skinwalker do to you?"
"He reminded me of what I really am."
"Oh?" Thomas turned to look at me with calm, deep gray eyes.
"Yes. It didn't take him long, once he set about it."
I felt sick to my stomach.
"What happened?"
"He hung me up by my heels," Thomas said, "and ripped strips of skin off me, one at a time." I shuddered.
"It's agonizing," he said.
"Not terribly dangerous to one of us. My demon didn't really have any trouble regenerating the skin, but it did become hungry. Very, very hungry." His eyes suddenly gleamed paler silver, and he looked back at the tigers, which were now restlessly prowling the pit.
"He'd taken a female kind to the lair, where he had me prisoner, and he fed her to me."
"Hell's bells," I breathed. Thomas watched the tiger's pace.
"She was lovely. 16 or so. I don't know exactly. I didn't ask for her name."
He spread his hands. "It was a fatal feeding, of course. I don't think I've ever really explained to you exactly what that is like."
"What is it like?"
I asked in a quiet rasp.
"Like becoming light," he said, his eyes drifting closed. "Like sinking into the warmth of a campfire when you've been shivering for hours. Like a hot steak after a day of swimming in cold water. It transforms you, Harry. Makes you feel..." His eyes became haunted, hollow.
"Whole." I shook my head.
"Thomas. Jesus."
"Once she was gone and my body was restored, the Skinwalker tortured me again, until I was in the same desperate condition. Then he fed me another doe." He shrugged. "Rinse and repeat, perhaps half a dozen times. He gave me young women, and then put me in agony again. I was all but chewing out my own innards when he took me to the island. To tell you the truth, I barely remember it." He smiled. "I remember seeing Molly, but you've taught her enough to protect herself, it seems."
"Thomas," I said gently.
He smirked. "If you ever get tired of her, I hope you'll let me know." I stared at him, sickened.
"Thomas!"
He looked at me again, still smirking, but he couldn't hold it. Once again, his eyes looked hollow, touched with despair. He looked away from me.
You don't get it, Harry.
Then talk to me, I said urgently. Thomas, Jesus Christ, this is not you.
Yes, it is, he spat, the words a bladed hiss. That is what it taught me, Harry. At the end of the day, I'm just an empty place that needs to be filled.
He shook his head. I didn't want to kill those girls, but I did it. I killed them over and over, and I loved how it felt. When I think back on the memory of it, it doesn't make me horrified. He sneered. It just makes me hard.
Thomas, I whispered, please, man. This isn't what you want to be. I know you, man. I've seen you.
You've seen who I wanted to be, he said, who I thought I was.
He shook his head and looked around at the people around us. Play a game with me.
What game?
He nodded toward a pair of young women walking by holding ice cream cones.
What do you see when you look at them?
Your first thought.
I blinked. I looked.
Blonde and brunette, too young for me, not bad to look at. I bet the blonde paid too much for those shoes.
He nodded and pointed at an old couple sitting on a bench.
Them?
They're fighting with each other over something and enjoying it. They've been together so long it's comfortable for them. Later they'll hold hands and laugh over the fight.
He pursed his lips and pointed at a mother chivying a trio of small children of various sizes along the zoo.
Them?
She's got an expensive ring, but she's here at the zoo alone. Her kids all have matching outfits. Her husband works a lot, and she doesn't look as good as she used to. Look how the shoes are biting into her feet. She's worried that she's a trophy wife, or maybe an ex-wife in progress. She's about to start crying.
Uh-huh, he said. Can I give you my first thoughts?
I nodded, frowning at him. Thomas pointed a finger at the young women.
Food.
He pointed a finger at the old couple.
Food.
He pointed a finger at the mother and her children.
Food.
I just stared at him. He rolled his head, inhaling deeply, and then exhaling.
Maybe it was all those kills together like that. Maybe he drove me insane with the torment.
He shrugged. Honestly, I don't know. I just know that things seem a lot simpler now.
What are you trying to tell me, I asked, that you're happy now?
Happy, he said, scorn ringing lightly in his voice. I'm not wandering around blind anymore, not trying desperately to be something that I'm not.
He looked back down at the tigers.
Something I can never be. I just stood there, shaking my head. Oh, empty night, Harry, he said, rolling his eyes. I'm not some kind of ravaging monster. I'm not some kind of psychotic rampaging around the city devouring virgins. He waved a hand in a casual gesture. Killing when you feed feels fantastic, but it's stupid. There are far too many advantages in ensuring that the kind survive. Not only survive, but grow and prosper. He smiled a bit.
You know, I really think I might have something to offer the world.
I never could have exerted any kind of influence on my kin as a moping exile trying to be human. Maybe this way, I actually can accomplish something. Promote a more responsible standard of relations between humanity and my kind. Who knows?
I stared at him and said, Gosh, that's noble. He eyed me. I hit him with my heaviest sucker punch. What does Justine think of it? He straightened and turned toward me, and there was imminent violence in the set of his body.
What? He asked. What did you say to me?
You heard me, I said, without changing posture or rising to the threat. His hands closed into fists, knuckles popping.
Still stings, doesn't it? I said quietly. Still burns you when you try to touch her?
He said nothing.
And you still remember what it was like to hold her? Like you did the night you trashed Madeline at Zero. Jesus Christ, Harry, he said.
He turned to face out, away from the tigers, and his voice was full of weariness.
I don't know. I just know that it doesn't hurt so bad all the time anymore.
He was quiet for a long time. Then he said in a very quiet voice,
I have bad dreams.
I wanted to put my hand on his shoulder, give him some support, but some instinct warned me that it wouldn't be welcomed.
You took a beating, I said quietly. What that thing did to you?
Thomas, it knew exactly how to get to you, how to torment you the most. But it won't last.
You survived. You'll get past it. And go back to that miserable half-life I had, he whispered.
Maybe, I said quietly. I don't know.
He looked at me.
You're my brother, I said. Nothing will ever change that. I'm here for you.
You're a damn fool, he said.
Yeah, it would be easy to use you. Part of me thinks it's a fantastic idea. I didn't say you weren't an asshole. I said you were my brother. The bodyguards stirred. Nothing big. They just sort of animated and moved toward the exits. Thomas grimaced.
Lara thinks I've made great progress.
He shrugged.
Proud of me.
I liked you better the other way, I said. So did Justine. Maybe that should tell you something.
I've got to go. She's afraid you'll think I'm all brainwashed. Didn't want to risk you trying to deprogram me when I haven't been programmed.
I confess the idea occurred to me. If someone had gotten into my head, I don't think there'd be so many doubts, he said.
This isn't something you can help me with, Harry.
Maybe, I said. Maybe not. Either way, you're still my brother.
Broken damn record, he said.
I held up a fist. He stared at it for a couple of silent beats before he made a fist of his own and wrapped my knuckles against his.
Don't call me, he said.
I'll be patient, I said, but not forever. He hesitated and then nodded once more. Then he thrust his hands into the hip pockets of his jeans and walked quickly away. The bodyguards fell in behind him. One of them said something while he had one hand pressed against his ear. Purely from petty malice, I waved a hand and hexed his radio or phone. Sparks flew out of his ear, and he all but fell over trying to get the earbug out. Thomas looked back. He grinned. Not long, but real. After he was gone, I turned to regard the tigers. I wondered if I knew them for what they really were, or if all I could see were the stripes.
I'd missed Kirby's funeral while I was in the infirmary in Edinburgh. A couple of weeks had gone by after that, and I'd talked to Will and Georgia by phone occasionally.
Gaming night came along, and as I had most weeks for the past several years, I showed up at Will and George's place. I had my Arcanos rulebook with me and a Crown Royal bag filled with dice. I was wearing a black t-shirt that had a monochrome image of several multi-sided dice and said, in block print, Come to the dork side. Do not make me destroy you.
Will answered the door and smiled at me.
Hey, Harry. Wow, your face is manly.
Chicks dig scars, I said.
Who is it?
Came Andy's voice. It sounded limp, lifeless.
It is I, Harry Dresden, I said solemnly.
Georgia appeared behind Will, smiling. Harry, she looked at my shirt and my gaming stuff.
Oh, we weren't really going to...
Kirby had been the one who ran the game for us. I stepped aside, grabbed the geek standing behind me, and tugged him forward.
This is Waldo Butters, I said, and his geek penis is longer and harder than all of ours put together.
Butters blinked, first at Georgia and Will, and then at me.
Oh, he said. Thank you?
Will looked from Butters to me, his eyes searching.
What is this? He asked gently.
Life, I said. It keeps going. Butters says he can handle an Arcanos game, or he can run a bunch of other ones if we want to try something new. I cleared my throat. If you like, we can go over to my place, change of view and so on. Georgia looked at me and gave me a small and grateful smile. Will looked at me uncertainly. Then he turned back into the apartment.
Andy?
She appeared beside Georgia. Andy looked absolutely withered. Multiple broken ribs and major surgery will do that to you. She was on her feet and moving, but it was clear that she'd been staying with Will in Georgia so that they could help care for her until she recovered. I smiled at Andy and said, I don't think Kirby would want us to stop playing completely. What do you think? I mean, it won't be the same game, but it might be fun. She looked at me and then at Butters. Then she gave me a little smile and nodded. Will swung the door open wide and we went inside, where I introduced Butters to everyone and produced several bottles of Mac's best ale. See, here's the thing. Morgan was right. You can't win them all. But that doesn't mean that you give up. Not ever. Morgan never said that part. He was too busy living it. I closed the door behind me while life went on. This is James Marsters. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Turncoat by Jim Butcher. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse, produced by David Rapkin, and directed by Bob Walter. Turncoat is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2009, all rights reserved. The book, Turncoat, is available wherever rock books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.